Welcome back for another episode of Back in Session. We're your hosts. My name is Demetrius Sebastian.
Hey, and I'm Wes Kendall. Welcome back, guys. Hey, so today we have a special episode. It's our first guest, so I hope you guys are excited. We're bringing on my friend, Dylan Osborne. This guy, I've known him for a little while now. We met back at ASU when we're both going to school there in our fraternity, Phi Gamma Delta, or Fiji. And then now we still are friends. We lived together for a little while, and he is a business owner here, and he's going to tell you a little bit about that. So welcome on, Dylan. Thanks for joining us.
What's going on, guys? How are we doing?
So you guys can start bullying me because I was a goddamn independent.
I mean, you were G'd, so it's like, you know, pretty bad.
I feel like I was pretty cool, though. I hung out with the frat guys, but I didn't have to pay any money. I feel like I found, like, a loophole.
What do they say about the Army? It's the biggest frat in the world or whatever?
Yeah, guess what? My fraternity has tanks, and yeah. I got paid to drink with my buddies.
Yeah. That's true.
All right, man. So you just got back from Vegas, right?
I did.
Okay, so I'm super jealous of you. I actually was talking about you for last week at work because I have a couple guys I work with that go to Vegas or shit. And I'm like, okay, look, I know a guy who's going to Vegas right now for his business. Why don't I get to go to Vegas? Cause that sounds awesome. He made it sound cool. So tell us a little bit about what that is and what you do in an expo, since apparently I'm never going to get to go to one cause no one likes me at work.
So, definitely. First of all, Vegas trips are always the most fun. They're always the ones you can't miss cause there's expos everywhere, but right. The Vegas expos, you gotta go. But my business is DabCap. I own a company called DabCap. It's we do a lot. So I guess the easiest way to describe DabCap would be an online smoke shop, but it's also a product. So DabCap itself is a company, but there is a product called the DabCap, which is a vape to rig adapter, invented by yours truly. So
yeah.
That's what I do. Kind of started out as just the adapter. We only had one color, and
how many colors do you have now?
God, like
too many.
Right now, currently available 12.
That's awesome.
We've got 12, but we've made like 20. I think over 25 colors now. And colors. I apologize.
And just to give like a little bit of context here, because I actually looked this up. Because he described this to me, and I was like, I had no idea what those things. So it's basically a little plug that attaches to like a dab vape device.
Yeah.
And then it latches onto a bong or a water
glass
pipe.
Piece. Right. Yeah. What's the term?
What is the correct water pipe?
So no, I guess for the listeners that are trying to like visualize it, the easiest way to say it is it's like a little funnel that goes on the tip of a vape pen and you put it on like where the bowl piece goes of a bong or a water pipe. It depends on where you're located and how politically correct you need to be. But
right
here in Arizona, you can call it a bong.
You can. That's right. True.
Wow. Moving on up, guys.
Yeah.
You know, we're progressive here. Don't worry. It's not all rattlesnakes and cowboys.
I rode my cactus here.
Right. So, I mean, I've had a pretty interesting point of view on this because I've seen you start this company from like the ground up. Right.
Right.
You know, it's pretty cool watching you like go from doing more of part-time thing to it being your full-time thing. Like it's amazing, you know, watching that whole process. What would you say like has been your favorite part of the whole journey?
Okay. Well, you know, what's funny is originally DabCap was not really supposed to be like a big company, or I'm not calling it a big company as it is right now, but it wasn't supposed to be even where it's at. I mean, I never envisioned it, at least. I was working on another gig at the time. I was doing this thing called the Top Shelf Box, which was a medical marijuana subscription box that was going to be delivered through the dispensaries to licensed card-holding patients.
Right.
So it was really, really advanced for its time. This was like 4 or 5 years ago, like pre-delivery. Now there's a lot of legal delivery companies right now. I do put emphasis on the word legal because there's a way more black market ones, obviously.
Hey, but man, that guy on a bicycle is running a legit business.
He's got family to feed.
Nice guy.
You know he is, right? Of course. But yeah, so back then, this was a little bit more taboo to the dispensaries. And so like this, it was just a harder sell. And so it was necessary because I had actually like pushed it quite a bit on social media. We weren't operating at all, but I was trying to build at least a following on social media so then we could pre-sell memberships and then basically walk into meetings with the dispensaries and be like, hey, we already have like X amount of members pre-sold. Like, why aren't we doing this? You know what I mean?
Like already a following.
Right. And so that was good because that kind of like taught me a lot of the fundamentals of like starting the business and doing the things that I needed to do to ultimately make DabCap succeed. But it's just crazy because like I was working so hard on Top Shelf for so long and then I had this like random idea to rip a vape out of a bong and how I originally did it was with a wine cork. That was like the OG dab cab.
Right.
And it worked really, like really I well.
That shit.
You know, straight up. Yeah. And I drilled a hole in a wine cork and, you know, it wasn't luxurious, but it got the job done. And so I realized it was really cool. And like I showed it to my dad. He's also a patient and a lot of my friends and a lot of these people all said, hey, man, like this is actually like super useful. Like we kind of like this, you know. And so I'm skilled in Illustrator. So I designed like 3D images in Illustrator and like renderings and like, well, not renderings. I'm not going to tilt my horn that hard, but basically drawings of like, you know,
what it should look like.
Blueprints, basically. Yeah.
You mean like
right.
What like an engineer would do before he makes a building, right? Like you basically sketch it out and you had like actual measurements.
Right, exactly. Like cross sections, things like that. Top views, bottom views, et cetera.
Yeah.
And so it was really unique because I had to make sure everything was in metric because everything is done in metric in the world other than the United States, obviously.
freedom units are the most important units.
Freedom units, of course. That's funny. America.
So I came up with this like design. I put it all together, and then I actually went on Fiverr, and I found a guy named David. And David, to this day, still works for me. He's the man. If he's listening right now, shout out to David.
Shout out. I hope you're listening, David.
David, you are the man. Because he does a great job, and within like 14 hours, including the time difference, I went from having like these Illustrator drawings that I had put together to like full blown 3D renderings made in like CAD software, and was ready to go. Product ready, basically. So I just sent these to, I'm shortening this process a little bit.
Right.
But I sent my designs to several manufacturers. I kind of fished them out, saw who would do a decent job, and found the manufacturer for the job, for at least for the first five batches. We ultimately moved on. But
You refined some processes and everything.
Yeah, we refined a lot of things. But the first dab cap was basically just like, I got like 3,000 of these white dab caps made. It was the MOQ.
The original.
Yeah, the original. And like they just sat in a stack in my room for a long time, like a while. And probably like the first 4 months. Kind of, dude, at first I...
Were you trying to sell them at that point or were you just holding on to them?
Well, it's funny. I was trying to sell them mainly in retail because I was trying to go e-com.
Okay.
But at the same time, I had developed so many relationships with so many like dispensary managers and owners because I was trying to sell Top Shelf for like 2 years prior, that I kind of just walked it into a lot of the places. And I was like, hey, like
you went to like a lot of dispensaries.
So you were going door to door for a while.
Yeah, dude, it was crazy, bro. I literally drove to like so many shops.
Would you say that they're like a nicer type of people to try and sell to though? Like they would probably be a little bit more accepting or at least nice if they said no.
Oh, it's actually it's crazy. The market is very diverse. I guess that's the way I would answer that question. Some of them, yes, they are very nice to do business with. It's very easy. It's super simple. They're like, wow, this makes a lot of sense. We should buy it. And I'm like, you should. And then they do. So it's great. But that definitely does not make up every single one of the customers, at least on the B2B end, that's for sure. The customers, it's just crazy. I guess we'll go more into depth in a little bit on like how the market is like built up.
Okay.
But yeah, it's crazy. Like some of them, I mean, cause you just have to keep in mind, some of these smoke shops are owned by like literally a 25-year-old kid who just saved up a bunch of money waiting tables and decided to open a smoke shop and it's been working. And then, so he's got a very small budget, you know what I mean? And then there's also dispensaries that are owned by multi-billion dollar corporations like Curaleaf that have over 160 locations. So they have, you know, like buying managers with X, Y, and Z, you know, protocols, I guess you'd say. I don't know. There's like a list of like buying procedures with them, you know, and like they're much harder to break into, just like any other like major account.
Yeah, I worked in B2B IT sales, and the number of people and the amount of bureaucracy that you can include just for a simple, you know, $100 purchase, it could take weeks.
Dude, yeah.
And they're buying little, you know, they're buying rubber stoppers from right. they're going to put on the front just in case to flip for, you know, however much. But it's, you walk in, there's like, nope, you got to do this paperwork and you are going to wait. And we might say no just because.
Right. And I mean, I guess that really comes back on like, it's kind of cliche to say, but like you hear it all the time. Relationships are everything. Dude, it's very important. Like I
at work. Why do you think we brought you on here? We're building a relationship with you. Oh, you guys are I'm physically reaching out.
That's funny.
But for real, man, I'm telling you, it's because it's crazy. Like, so there's a vape company called Select. They make cartridges. They also make, well, they don't anymore. They divide it into two different brands, but they used to make CBD products as well. And basically, so Select, they are one of the country's biggest cartridge brands. They're valued at over $1 billion. They were acquired by like Curaleaf for like 1 point some billion. I don't know the exact amount, but either way, it was a big number.
Right.
And I just happened to be friends with one of the marketing managers out here in the Phoenix location. And I had met him like previously through, you know, just industry events. It was kind of just like a what's up type thing. He wasn't working for Select at the time. It was like we just kind of like met.
Both in the industry.
Right. Like, you know what I mean? We just became buddies. And and it worked out because later it turns out he is a buying manager for Select, huge company. And like, I mean, these guys buy massive amounts of dab caps. You know what I mean? So right. It's like, but at the same time, to have been able to acquire that account without basically of being walked in by my friend, much more difficult. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's who you know at the end of the day, which it sucks to say it. Everyone wants to be able to walk in with their briefcase and their product and win. But as you know, like you just described.
It's who you know, and it's like if you're ready.
Yeah, and
know?
I mean, it's at like the end of the day, if you weren't ready,
it didn't matter.
You're right. A simple concept, a simple idea. It's funny because when he mentioned that you invented this, I thought he was kind of overstretching. I was like, how could no one have thought of this before? Like the amount of stoner engineers I met in my day, I was just like, yeah, of course that exists already. No, it doesn't. I checked.
Yeah.
If someone invents it, I'm pretty sure that they would just be ripping you off at this point. I mean.
Well, it's funny. There actually have been several rip-offs.
Already? How many years has this been going for?
So DabCap's been around for almost 2 years.
You have like a patent on this?
Well, it's funny that you ask. We've been patent pending for quite some time now, but it's more so at this point about defending the trademark of the dab cap, because there's a lot of knockoffs coming out and advertising it as a dab cap, which we're not okay with. So here's the thing. We're okay with their customers calling their knockoff product a dab cap.
It's like having a Kleenex.
Right.
It's a tissue. I'd love you to call it a dab cap. That's fine. I know that you didn't buy it from me, but your friend who wants the same thing you have, if he Google searches it, my AdWords are going to send it my way.
100%. Right? Like, that's the thing is if, you know, if you had a dab cap right now and I was like, hey, man, or no. If you had a knockoff, I apologize. If you had a knockoff dab cap, if you had a whatever, loser cap. I'm not going to plug in any of the knockoffs. So, yeah, a loser cap. If you had a loser cap. I would still hope that, you know, a buddy would be like, hey, man, pass the dab cap, you know, like my way, whatever. And I honestly do think that's the case. There's a lot of people that I get tagged in of using knockoff products on the Instagram. And
some good fans right there.
Right? And yeah.
They got your back.
So it's funny. You're right. No, I get tagged in both. So there's people using the fake dab caps and there's people advertising the fake dab caps. And then my followers will tag me in the comments and be like, hey, nice fake dab cap. You know what I mean? And those people are great. I love them to death. But there's also, I will get physically tagged. Like, I'll check my notifications. Like, oh, you're tagged in a new post. And I'll look at it. And it's someone using a competitor's knockoff dab cap. Mm-hmm. And in the copy, in the description, it's like, oh, using my dab cap, you know, using my original dab cap. And at that point, I love that. It's like,
whatever, dude. I don't care that I lost the money. I'm just glad that you're
calling it. All day. Yeah. Call it the dab cap, please.
Yep.
I love that. I love that you have that attitude on it, because a lot of people just get salty. Like, they're willing to, you know, you know, cut off their nose to spite their face. It's like, it doesn't matter. I lost that one sale, but guess what? I won the war on it.
Exactly. I want the dab cap to be not just a pronoun in the sense of, like, it is the dab cap, a named product that
right.
you capitalize, but I also want it to be just a noun. Like, it's a thing. It's part of every, you know, cannabis user's arsenal, I guess. You know, they have a lighter, they have a dab cap, they have a vape, whatever it is. Right. You know what I mean? And so...
one of the essentials.
Right. You know what I mean? And so, yeah. And whether it's the brand name dab cap or a knockoff, that's fine and dandy if they're calling it that. But the businesses themselves, the people who are selling the knockoffs, they cannot be calling it the dab cap. So yeah, we're, fair. Yeah, we're fervently defending the trademark. We're obviously hoping the provisional patents are eventually granted. It's a little bit difficult being in the industry that we're in.
Yeah.
Working with federal agency, you know what I mean? Patenting something, so
that's true. Cutting edge, it's very cutting edge right now.
Yeah, I mean, obviously things are changing at a rapid pace, but we're still at the very infant stages of.
I'm actually interested. This isn't even a question I thought of until just now. What is your theory on when we'll have either all 50 states or at a state level legalizing, or is it federal legalization? Because Wesleyan are in the, you know, we're owned by the federal government.
Departments of the government.
We're equipment. We're not allowed to, you know, use these things. We're both supporters of the movement, however, but we don't break the law. What's your thought pattern? Where do you think we're going to have like a full on, everyone's just going to like roll over and decide this is the future?
So, you know what? I think it's kind of going to go like this. And I think it's already going like this right now if you look at it. But basically, I think the federal government is going to eventually go full hands off in the sense of they're not going to just like mass approve it and just create this regulated system that they're in charge of, like
right.
yada yada yada. I don't know. It's not going to be that. It's not going to be like a prescription drugs. It's not going to be like alcohol right away. It's not going to be like any of that. You know what I mean? What the feds are going to do, in my opinion, what I believe they're going to do at least, is I think they're going to leave it up to the states, because that's pretty much what they've been doing for the last
decade.
Yeah, right? I would say literally 10 years at this point. Like, there have been a countless amount of states that have gone medical and recreational now, and the feds haven't done a single thing about it,
right.
despite it still being illegal, right? And so I think the feds are going to kind of keep doing exactly what they've been doing, but they're going to formally do it versus kind of informally. Because right now it's kind of like, oh, you know, like don't ask, don't tell type thing.
Right.
You know,
just not acknowledging it.
Right.
Basically.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just they've got other things to focus on. I think it's so low on the priorities.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And so I think that basically they're just going to come along and be like, hey, you know what? We're not even worried about this anymore. Let's have the states handle it. You know, if whatever state wants to go recreational, go ahead. If they want to go medical, go ahead. The majority of them already have gone medical.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, who cares at this point? But whatever the laws are going to be, I think are originally going to be dictated by the states. And I think eventually, and I'm still talking like this could be another 10 years to even 20 out. Like you never know how long this is going to take. You know, things
right.
move really slow at the government. Obviously, you guys know that very firsthand. But ultimately, I think the feds are kind of going to look at all the state programs that are working best and
see which one's going to bring in the most tax dollars.
Yeah. Yeah. Ideally, right? For that.
Bottom dollar.
And, 100%. Yeah. And kind of create some hybrid program.
Right.
Between all this, all the ones that are working, and make it an eventual umbrella thing. You know what I mean?
But sounds very reasonable.
All I'm saying is the DEA does not have as much clout at the Capitol Hill as the billionaires do. And if the billionaires decide they want to make money on this, the government's going to say, well, we might as well get the tax money with it.
Right.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's...
they will.
Leaving all politics aside, I mean, I know a lot of people who have, like, beliefs that certain people will just throw Hail Marys to...
get it done.
Win elections. You never know. You
know what I mean? I know exactly where you're going with that one, and I'm actually expecting it.
You never know. And so it's just the world we live in. You know, right. I just think it's at this point, it's like almost comical how much like a lot of people don't care on so many governmental levels.
Right.
You know what I mean? Whether it's stateside or federal, like, I guess we'll talk about like a video I filmed later.
Yes, we're definitely going to talk about that.
But there was a, you know, police officer involved.
Right.
And
he just did not want to be a part of it.
Dude, like the guy could not have cared less. And I was shocked.
You're not hurting anybody.
Yeah.
Right. At the end of the day, it's he can fine you, he can be in a jerk to you, he can arrest you, he can make it a whole thing. But at the end of the day, if you're not harming anyone, who cares?
Right.
Yeah, I think that's really, what it kind of comes down to. You know, I think there's a lot of police officers out there. I think there's I mean, it's obvious. Like, you go online, you can read things. Like, there's a lot of cops out there who just don't even support the fact that it's illegal. Like, they themselves openly talk about the fact that they have real police work to be doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they have,
like,
they're trying to actually help people.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They have actual criminals to be worried about, you know? So,
true.
We'll leave most of the politics out of it, but I think it's going to it's definitely shifting. You know, I think it's evident things are shifting
culturally
to shift off the politics. Then I think being an entrepreneur is always something that everyone always talks about. They're like, man, I want to run my own business. I want to be that guy.
Especially these days.
Trust me, everyone, it takes nothing to add, what's an entrepreneur to your Instagram bio.
Right.
What actually motivated you to create this business? Like, where were you at in your headspace?
It's funny you ask, because segueing off that, the whole entrepreneurial type thing, it's cliche to say, because it's only cliche because so many scam artists are saying it, but basically I truly believe, like, entrepreneurs know when they're entrepreneurs from a very, very young age. For example, I was selling lemonade, like a lot of kids, at like 10 years old, but I didn't just like sell lemonade. I didn't just like set up a table and like have some Crystal Light and a poster. You know what I mean? Like, I did that in the beginning, and then I reinvested my funds.
Then you put CBD into the...
I'm just kidding. I'm not even kidding, though. I literally reinvested my funds, and I was like, hey, Mom, you want to take me to Big Lots? I saw they had this lemonade stand. I literally saw, like, because the Fry's is right next door to the grocery store, and we drove by, and it was, like, right in front. You know, they put all the things, like, in the front, like, oh, come in, buy our things, you know?
There's a lot of people there.
Oh, yeah, I need that. You know what I mean? And so basically, I, at like 11 years old, 10 years old, I had like this full-blown operating lemonade stand that was there for like regular hours between X amount of time. And like, we had a full menu. I had Otter Pops. I had lemonade.
So smart.
I had
Otter Pops.
Sun tea. You name it. I had
my lemonade
all.
Stand sucked.
You know what I mean?
Right?
And so, I don't know. It's like things like that where I kind of look back and I'm like, wow, man, those were like some... Those are some entrepreneurial tendencies being shown from a young age.
Absolutely.
From an age where you're not just pretending to do something to flex for a bunch of people on Instagram.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because like
that's what it's about now. It's about the clout of being an entrepreneur, whereas
something
about providing a service and turning a profit was something that was innate in you at an early age.
Right.
No, 100%.
You weren't doing it because of the flex. You're doing it because it's what you wanted to do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's funny. I mean, being an entrepreneur has only been cool probably since like 2013, 2014. Like,
since Instagram made
any
it cool.
earlier, probably not, because back then even Instagram was meant for like art.
Right.
Like, nobody was just like,
you take a picture of a flower, it would all be black and white, but then you'd colorize just the petals of the flower.
Right. Remember?
And
yeah.
then you Old would school. Put a sad lyric.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man.
You know,
dinosaur these days.
It was not the social media beast that it is now that influences how people act and what they do. So I think back then was kind of like where a lot of these things would come through. I mean, to be honest with you, I would also, like, I loved selling things online.
Right.
I would buy things and I would just resell them online often, because eBay was like, people still used eBay back then. I mean, I don't know.
That used to be big for a while.
Dude, I'm assuming people still use eBay now, but people loved eBay back then. Like, I remember sitting there and, like, fervently refreshing a page. You know what I mean? It's like 41 seconds left.
Checking it. Yeah, it's like a countdown.
It's like this clown selling me this for $20. I'm about to flip it for $40 next week.
Yeah.
And it's like, so I was doing that, like, at a pretty young age. I was doing it with... Oh man, I'm trying to remember like what I was selling. It was honestly just kind of like whatever toys I was kind of over and just whatever like things was around the house that I could sell.
Right.
I'm not even saying that was right. Who knows? Maybe I sold some shit I shouldn't have sold, but You never know.
I'm just, you know, flexing the sales muscle, learning.
Dude, it was just like, oh, wow, this looks sellable. I'm going to sell it, you know?
And so, like, I was it moves, it moves.
Right. You know, I'd say I was like in probably like 14 to 16 around then.
Right.
And then even in college, dude, like I started this page called the ASU Easy Class Guide, which is still going strong, surprisingly.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. And basically it was this Facebook page where, you know, when you just needed a random college credit, it was like
a filler.
Yeah. I'm not talking about like things for your major that are important that are going to affect your future. Elective. Yeah, you need an upper division humanities elective.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That so, stupid
video class. It's the video class, right?
Beatles.
The Beatles. The Beatles
class. Best class ever.
Or at U of A, it was the history of U of A, which if you showed up and could sing the whole fight song, then basically you got an A.
Right. There were GPA boosters is what they were. And so that was kind of the point of the page was like, you know what? Like, at the time when I started the page, I was a bio major, and biology is obviously not the easiest major, and so I was trying to focus all my attention on biology.
Were you a pre-med guy, biology, or were you
pre-law, right?
We were all pre-med at one point.
I thought you were pre-law, bro.
I switched. Oh. Biology scared me off. Yeah.
Everyone thought that they were pre-med they weren't.
I didn't fail it,
but what was the class that turned you around?
Do you really want to know?
I want to know exactly what class. I know.
Let's share which class it was. Everyone go around and share.
Not pre-med.
It's pathetically early.
Let's hear it.
Bio 181.
All right, now
horrible, horrible
bio
class.
You didn't make it past the bios.
I got a
which one?
There was 181.
I can't do math. I couldn't do math.
Pause. 181, microbiology, brutal. 182.
Oh, micro. I didn't make it to micro.
Micro's brutal, bro.
Micro was. I took that one first. That was my first ASU class, and it was very like slapped me in the face.
Dude, that class is a filter class. That's what I call a filter class.
Because I did my chems first, and I got
no, they told me, they're the like, face. Well, if you're good at bio, you could take 181. And I was like, I'm good at bio. Dude, and then, fuck.
In high school, I crushed bio. I was in honors. I wasn't AP. I was honors. And so, but I crushed it, and I got, I don't know, an A in the class, whatever it was, you know what I mean? Bio 181. Well, first I took 182 first because it didn't matter what order you took them. 182, super easy.
Yeah. Mitochondria are the powerhouse of the cell.
Yeah, let's go. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Here's a pea plant, a pea pod.
Right. 182 is easy.
Yeah.
Because it was all physical. It was all like external, outside the cell. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was so easy, and I got like an A. It was a super easy class. But 181, I got a C+. And it was such an eye-opening experience because it was the first time I had ever gotten a C, like a real like hard C, like on a report. You know what I mean? Like I'd gotten C's on tests, whatever it was. You know what I mean? Here and there. It wasn't a common
like
thing,
fucking though. Transcript, motherfucker.
At least he actually made it through the class. I got to 2 weeks of calc, and I had I was told that I could drop or I could stay longer and fail.
Yeah,
and I was out.
Yeah, you're like,
and
all right.
I looked at the syllabus. I was coming from Pima Community College to the University of Arizona. And I was like, cool. So I'm going to do political science. Yeah. And then they were like, oh, well, you're going to have to do a, what's it called? An externship or something and like go hang out with some political people. It's like, cool. So I'm going to be sociology now because I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty funny.
Man. Yeah. Everyone had their wake up moment. Mine was Anatomy 202.
Oh, Anatomy.
They're like, oh, you have to memorize all these blood vessels. I'm like,
blood vessels, they're all the same.
And the nerves.
Okay, the nerves.
Good luck.
But, dude, you know what's funny? At the end of it, any degree worth getting, and I'm not going to say any that aren't.
My degree is in underwater basket weaving, I'm aware.
Basically, any degree worth getting, I've kind of learned, is going to be, like, very difficult in one way or the other. You just have to, like, kind of, like, zone in and realize, like, what you're good at. Like, because if you suck at math, like, well, you know, like you might want to design rocket ships, but maybe you shouldn't. You know what I mean? Like,
not everyone's there. Not everyone's there. We need janitors.
Time. You know,
we need people who aren't good at stuff.
Not even that.
First of all. Oh, no, I'm saying it right now.
Yeah,
right. That's my hot take of the day already.
Oh man,
we're early for it. But I'm saying it right now that not everyone's cut out to be a rock star. I wasn't. I crawled out of college, man, and I barely made through. The only thing good that came out of me I got my piece of paper, I got my commission to the Army, and no one's asked me about my degree since.
Isn't that hilarious?
if you want to say hilarious, that's a way of looking at it. No, it's super funny. I'm sitting here, I'm like, well, that's my debt. And
that's why you're now enslaved in the army for 6 years.
Yes.
Well, you know what's crazy? I have a buddy. I'm not going to name any names, but I have a buddy who did not do well in school. You know, but here's the thing. He's a genius. He's actually a genius. Like, one of the smartest dudes I know. Crushed his GMAT, crushed all his standardized testing, but did horrible in school.
Right.
Like, just horrible. Like low 2 point something GPA. Like, barely graduated, basically.
Right.
And he now works for a very large Fortune 500 company and has a very high-paying salary. And guess what? On his application and on his resume, where it was like, yeah, tell us about your education, he just put that he got a 3.8. I'm not encouraging that anyone does that.
Oh, my God.
But at the same time, I am letting any student out there who's listening know that...
we're going to get an email back. Someone's going to be like, yeah, so I put 3.8. I had a 2.7, and they check.
Yeah. Now I'm homeless.
But here's the funny part. And, like, you know, maybe this is, like, an opportunity for a business. This is where, like, the entrepreneurial mind comes in. It's like, you know what? There's no database to check any of that.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm not saying it's
ethically
correct.
There's a database, but the problem is the
no one's calling any schools.
Well, that's a laziness level because apparently it depends. Because if you work for, like, I think Intel, they check.
Yeah, but you need like a clearance to work for them pretty much, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. But like you said, but if it's like a smaller law firm, do they have the time to check? I don't know.
But did you know the funniest part about working for Intel?
What?
If you're just a kid who has been hacking computers since you're 12 years old, and you're better than any CS major because you've been doing it since you're 12 years old and you're 26 and you have 14 years experience at that point. You've more years of experience than you were at the age you started. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They will still hire you. Like, you don't need the degree.
Government does that.
At my current job, we have what's called the cyber range. And it's literally these guys who are white hat hackers and business guys and they show them how they're going to bust up their, they basically create a cloud environment, a simulated environment. And there's, so I have this security, this. And then we have this guy who's about my age. Dude, he's so funny. He's like this guy. He's like, all right, cool. And he's like, click, 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 click. He's not wearing a trench coat or anything. It's not that cool.
Oh,
like,
it's not.
And he just rips up their shit. And then, like, guess what? Then we get a bunch of sales. Cause they're like, what do you mean you could do this? He's like, yeah, I'm in, dude. I simulated have like everything that I need.
And they make a ton of money doing that.
It's, yeah,
you know what I mean?
It's
like,
true.
It's crazy. Like, and a lot, dude, funny. Like, I've heard this so many times because I have a few buddies in, like, especially the security, like, the cybersecurity division. But I know, like, a lot of people, like, in the networking as well. So many people say the best people in the industry don't have a degree because they've been doing it before they even made degrees for.
That's a good point.
Know what I mean?
Like, it's like Nicole's, my girlfriend's dad, who was like, he was coding before there was even an option to learn it in school.
Exactly.
And he created like the whole software for the judicial court system in Arizona. So it's like, you know, that no degree. And he's making like, he's retiring, making six figures for the rest of his life, you know?
And obviously you need to like continue, like you need to stay refreshed and stay on your shit. You know what I mean? Technology is ever evolving, but those guys are, they're obsessed with it. You know, that's why they started at such a young age and stayed with it their whole lives, you know, like, and I don't know. I've just always found that hilarious. Cause it's like,
it's a weird place we live in, man.
You know,
no one's loyal to their jobs anymore. It's like, it's all about what the skills you bring to the table. And these pieces of paper don't speak as much as they used to.
It's an equalizer, you know, like what you can produce, not what you accredited with, you know?
Well, here, real quick, let's take our halfway break. Let's go and do some social media plugs. You guys are, again, listening to Back in Session. We are now currently on the podcast app for iTunes, and we are on Spotify. We're going to be expanding to a couple other platforms here in the next following weeks, and we'll let you know when those are available if you do not use iTunes or Spotify. And you can find me on Instagram at Dimitri Sebastian. Wes?
You can find me at WKENDLE_MFT on Instagram. And also look for us at BNS Bravo November Sierra _radio for our new Instagram page we're going to be launching. So check us out there. And Dylan, where can we find you at?
You can find us on all social platforms on Original Dab Cap, or you can just go on originaldabcap.com. Newly founded on YouTube, I will say, you can go on YouTube and search Original Dab Cap as well. We just launched our channel last week, so definitely check it out. There's a pretty funny video on there that we'll talk about pretty soon.
Right, so I guess the next question I have for you is, what exactly was the turning point from going from side hustle to CEO, would you say, Dylan?
That's funny. It was honestly, I kind of did that a little early. Not advocating that anyone does something like that, but basically for like several weeks straight, I was making the same amount of money on a daily basis through the retail sales of the DabCap website as I was waiting tables at the time. And I'm giving myself less credit. I let that go for longer than a few weeks. I let that go for several months. And then I realized like, oh, I kind of had saved up enough money and could take the risk of not having a backup job to support DabCap. You know what I mean? Because at the time, the whole point of waiting tables was to have money to invest into the business, which could then move forward, right? And so at that point, I'd saved enough money after a few months and realized like, oh, okay, let's do this, you know? But it definitely wasn't like anywhere near where it's at right now. And honestly, if I look back on it now, I probably would have waited a little bit longer because I definitely put some serious pressure on myself. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you need that pressure to perform. You know what I mean?
Make like baby bird getting pushed out of the nest. Was it scary? Right. Was it scary kind of like going? I mean, I guess you were a server, so you could have gotten another serving job. But was it kind of scary like saying like, I'm going to go ahead and go all in on this?
Yeah, definitely was scary. I had a really good serving job. I was working at like a pretty high-end restaurant and it was locally owned spot, so like it was not very corporate. It was just a good place to be in the server world. You know what I mean?
Oh, no,
and
I know.
So that in its own right was kind of scary, being like, oh, you know what? I'm just throwing this away. And it wasn't so much that I was thrown in the way in the sense of like, oh, like I can't come back to here because I was doing like a, I here's the thing. The day I decided like, okay, we're doing this full send right now, was actually on 420. So I got scheduled to work.
God, you are so basic.
No, isn't that hilarious? Yeah,
of course it was.
But basically, there was a pretty big event on 420. It was a huge industry event.
Right.
And I had requested it off several weeks in advance, and I wanted to set up a DabCap table there and be there and have a presence, right? And so I got scheduled to work. And
you're like, no.
You're like, no.
Yeah, I kind of was like, you know what? Like, this isn't going to happen. Like, I'm not going to miss this opportunity and sacrifice this chance because, like, you know, obviously everyone knows 420 is a pretty big date in that
it's
industry.
Your guys' Black Friday. Yep.
You know, yeah, it is the Black Friday, right? Yes. And it's a big deal. And so it's a good time to launch a brand in that industry, you know? So it would have been a huge missed opportunity. To me, I kind of sat there and waited. I was like, okay, well, if all else fails, I can get another serving job. It's a bigger risk to lose this opportunity than it is to lose this job. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And maybe it was like, you know, such a point, you know, where your subconscious or something in you was saying like, look, this is now so important to me that it is my priority.
Yeah, kind of. It was almost like a test, you know, because I did. I tried to call in sick.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, I can't come
like
in,
I have to commit at this point.
Yeah. Right. And the manager was like, no, like you can't call out. Like we need you tonight, blah, blah, blah. Like if you call out, just don't come back pretty much. You know what I mean? And I was like, well,
okay,
bye.
I guess I'm not coming back. You know what I mean? And yeah, so that was it.
You got to bet on yourself every once in a while, right?
It was a great bet. You know, right? I've been having fun ever since. So that event was awesome, dude. Like people were absolutely mind blown. It was like the first time like I had like shown it to the masses, you know what I mean? Other than like Instagram. But at the time our following wasn't that big on Instagram. So it was kind of like, I don't know. It was fun seeing people's minds being blown in person.
What are your hours like doing? Cause I feel like everyone has this concept. So I was telling my buddy this, I was like, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to start my own business and I'm going to be my number one worst employee. I'm probably going to end up firing myself first, but it's like, so what are your hours look like at being, you know, your own boss right now?
I'm usually working between like 10 and 8 PM. Usually those are my hours. I normally wake up around 6 I try to eat breakfast, and
I always see you fire off a post like first thing, though, you know. So it's not like,
well, you're right.
You get started at least, you know, on social media wise, right?
You're correct there. I'm doing hard work, and what I mean by that is like things that progress the company, things that move the chains, like things that are on the list of to do's. You know what I mean? The things that need to be get done, the priorities. But I am always, dude, side work. I would argue that I'm literally never off the clock, which is kind of, sometimes it gets a little bit exhausting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I try to update our Instagram story once an hour, every single hour between roughly 6 to 7 a.m. all the way to, you know, 8 to 10 at night. So pretty much all day.
Right.
Like,
Wes, yeah. I can't do that yet.
I'm trying, bro.
I got talking to about social media use. Now I need to up my game. And now I see what he means, because apparently I'm on some peewee shit.
Yeah.
Well, we all are compared to Gary Vee. So, you know.
Yeah, dude, Gary Vee is an absolute monster.
28 pieces of content a day at least.
Dude, but
are you kidding me? 28?
He's the one I model it all off of, yeah. Like
28 pieces, like, from one source, or, like, multiple sources?
Multiple.
Okay, so you can, like, copy some stuff. So if you did 4 posts on Instagram, 4 posts on Facebook, 4 posts on
Twitter.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You need to respect, and Gary talks about this all the time, but you need to respect each platform uniquely. So it might sound easy to be like, we'll just 4 on Facebook, 4 on Instagram, 4 on YouTube, 4 on whatever it is. No, you can't just do, like, the same post over and over and over again. Like, you have to make individualized posts for each and every platform, right? Because they're all different. They all operate differently.
God, so, damn it, Dylan, this is great content.
Right?
But yeah, no. So it's, dude, I guess when you think about it that way, it's definitely the hours are a little bit different. But, like, the hours that I'm, like, sitting there and I'm calling people and I'm sending emails and I'm doing, you know, all the things that are, like, actually on the to-do list, those I try to remain clocked in from 10 to about 8.
It has to feel better, though, to be doing it for yourself, though, because I feel like there's nothing worse. You clock into your job. So, like, I used to, like, sell cars and stuff, and I sold the IT stuff, like I told you, and it was just so annoying and just such a pain in the ass to get up and make those phone calls and do all the stuff. And it was just because at the end of the day, like, it just, I knew I was getting, like, a pittance of the end amount. Whereas now, when you're making these sales calls and you're doing these, like, really annoying meetings and these things, you're like, man, deep down, I really don't want to do this. I'd rather just hang out. But now it's for you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's definitely highly motivating. It's a lot more fun when you work for yourself. Mm-hmm. You can also let yourself slack off a lot more. But it's kind of, you know, I don't know. I would much rather have the responsibility of keeping myself in check than dealing with all the other,
like, a boss telling you you have this task to do. Would you say you find, like, you get more work done motivating yourself than if you had, like, a task list from someone else?
Yeah, I would definitely say so. It, not every single day, obviously.
Right.
I'm human. There's some days where I just kind of decide, F this, I'm not doing anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I still,
but as you should, you know,
right?
Everyone, you should
know
have some.
Hilarious is I still update the story, like, all day. So it's kind of like, am I really not doing anything? You never know.
You're always doing something.
Just a little bit. What I mean? But it's never, I don't know. Like on Sundays, I kind of changed up this new thing. Like, because, I'm starting to learn that you really do need to give yourself a mental break and relaxation and kind of, and more than just those 30 minutes than you give yourself every night before you go to bed. You know, like, you need to get a real break in. That's not enough. And so what I started doing on Sundays is I don't post on the gallery at all, and all of the story posts are just me sharing other people's posts. So it's like,
oh, I see that,
like an appreciation.
I like that
thing. You know what I mean? So, like, just tag us and stuff, and, like, you're gonna go on the story, guaranteed. Because, like, normally, like, I try to post a couple people on the story every single day. We probably get tagged in, like, 15 things, and I probably only share 3 of them a day. You know?
Hear that, dab fans? Sunday's the day.
Send it. Send it. Actually, here's a good time for this. Just run me through your social media, like, way of doing things, your methodology from, like, kind of the beginning of the week, the end of the week, or the beginning of the day, the end of the day, just how it looks for you, like, your best practices and what works best for you.
So, I mean, it's kind of, I guess, complex. It's, I don't know, throughout the day, here's the thing, the story, and we'll go back on Gary Vee, he talks about this all the time, but the story is for exactly what it sounds like. It's for telling the story, like, of your day. You know what I mean? So, like, in that sense, I make sure that all of our story content is pretty raw, like, straight from my camera, It's either me talking to the camera. It's like me shooting a picture of something I thought was cool. It's me outside. It's, you know, I take pictures of like just very random things pretty much all throughout my day.
Right.
Because it kind of just tells people where I'm at and what I'm doing. And and I think they like that. I think a lot of people, just are interested in what you're doing because they think it's cool. They like the company.
You're a person,
they
want to support.
Yeah, yeah, you know what I mean? Whatever it is. And B, I think people literally live vicariously through that. I think a lot of people are bored. And
I can tell you that I do that right now. Like, right? I follow Barstool. Yeah. And my job is very boring, and it's a very normal place to be. But like, they have like these half-hour videos of just the bullshit that is going on in the office the last 3 days. And I watch that, and I feel less bored.
Right. That's what I'm saying. True. Yeah, I think people do the same thing. I think people who are bored and at their job, wherever they're at, you know what I mean? They might be sitting in a cubicle. They could be in a truck. They could be anywhere. I think they might be, like, scrolling through there and, like you said, living vicariously through other pages. And I think DabCap happens to be one of them because people think it's interesting to kind of see me almost do my own thing. And I'm not trying to sound like I'm bragging or anything like that.
No, you can brag. No, you're fine. I feel like you're doing it.
Yeah. It's a different life, you know? It's just, it's a different unique life. It's definitely different than, like, kind of like a normal lifestyle.
You take the risk, you get after it, you're allowed a little bit of bragging. That's what we actually have you on here today for. You're specifically people allowed hear about to do it today. I'm giving you a free pass.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. I can't speak for the rest of the days.
Right. No, yeah, 100%. Humble every other day, right?
As far as, like, you know, your hard posts, do you stick to, like, a every other day thing, or are you doing more of, like, a, you know, when something comes up?
So if you looked at my page right now, you would assume it was like every other day or even every 2 days.
Right.
But that's only because I've been really busy at an expo last week. And the week prior, I've been launching new products. We've had a lot of new products being launched right now. And the week before that was Black Friday. So I've kind of just been kind of slammed.
Slowing down a little bit.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like this time of the year is always kind of crazy. And so ideally, it's every single day.
Mm-hmm.
But lately, it's been every other day. That's never a problem for me. So here's the thing. The days I don't post, like, honestly, right now, as we're recording this, which...
Hey, it's Sunday, guys.
Don't stress.
It's Sunday.
It's Sunday.
You it's know a Sunday fun day. We'll get this post up. Don't worry. We're keeping them accountable.
But the days I don't post, like, I used to at least get pretty anxious. I'd get stressed out because a post generates a ton of attention. It puts it sends at least 100 people to the website every single time. And so the days I don't do that, I'd almost feel guilty, right?
Right.
But I don't so much anymore because, A, as long as I post every single day on the story frequently, people know we're alive. We know we're operating. We know we're doing our thing. You know what I mean?
Right.
We just might be too busy to post, and they probably don't even notice.
Too busy making sales.
Right. You know what I mean? Doing the things.
Yeah.
And so there's that. And then, B, we do extensive influencer marketing.
So you have, like... Okay, I was actually about to ask you about this. So how do you feel about, like, brand reps? Are you... Because it sounds like you have, like, a pretty loyal following that are willing to post your product as it is, like, love them to death. But so how often are you reaching out to what you'd say, like, our...
influencers, right?
Influencers in your industry and saying, like, hey, like, you want to partner up for this?
So we're reaching out to influencers all the time. We don't pay very many of them. We pay a few of them because they offer a tremendous amount of value and they should be paid. It's... Mm-hmm. The only way to work with them, honestly.
Right. It's a great marketing tool.
You do, like, free products a lot?
So we give away a lot of
He definitely
free...
needs to go into that, like, his whole, you know, he does, like, this giveaway thing that it's pretty ingenious.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's...
about the giveaway. No, I want to know.
So I do a couple things, with the influencers, they definitely get free products, obviously, because it's how they promote them. You know what I mean? And it's... With the influencers, it's really dependent on how much value they offer, which is pretty much defined by how much engagement they get.
Right.
But we also do weekly giveaways, like you were saying, Wes, on the page. And basically, so we post every single day, like I was saying, and on each one of those posts, we'll be like, okay, giveaway day one, giveaway day two, giveaway day three. And with every single day, there's a different subset of rules that anyone who wants to enter for that day needs to follow. Mm-hmm. And usually the rules are comprised of something with, like, tag a couple friends, follow our page and our backup page, you know, tag a smoke shop. That one works really well. We get a lot of wholesale accounts through that. We're in over 200 shops right now, and a lot of them have come from the giveaways.
You go nationwide, all the way to the East Coast, too. Nationwide?
Nationwide. We're actually in a few other countries, too.
You're in a few other countries, I was about to ask that. Yeah. Are you having some touch over there?
Yeah.
What other countries are you in? Saudi Arabia?
No, we're in the
U.S. Are you in China?
We're in the U.K., Chile...
That's not what I would have expected.
Believe it or not, Chile is the proper way.
I believe that's a little spice on it, right?
You know what I mean? But either way, whatever it is, it's a great market. They've got a pretty big medical program out there.
Mm. I didn't know that. No idea.
It's a little bit in its infancy stages, which is kind of the Wild West, but that's it doesn't matter to
me. We're from Arizona. We're used to the Wild West.
Yeah, we're used to it. Yeah. But yeah, no. So it's, yeah, we're over there. We're in Peru. We're in
Peru.
Yeah. Wow. Pretty that's crazy. Pretty obviously, amazing. Canada. I've got a distributor in Canada, actually, but Canada is a, you know, up there, everything
illegal,
is
illegal, right? Yeah. I heard that their system's been kind of jacked up lately, though.
Well, I mean,
they have some things.
They have this interesting thing, and this is kind of a tangent, where they you have to spend all this money to set up your store and prove that you can do it, and then you enter into a lottery, and if you enter the lottery and you don't get it, you're just screwed over and you lose all that money.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's kind of how this is a little bit of a tangent, but that's kind of how California's system is. So a lot of companies actually are, or not companies, but a lot of states are. That's Arizona is one of the best programs. And right now we're only medical, but we're about, it's like a $600 million medical market right now, just in Arizona.
Jeez. I heard that they're building some, I don't know, what I want to call them fields. Like they're building some marijuana, they're staging marijuana grow ops in Arizona in preparation for future legalization for recreation right now. There's like some venture capitalists. I had a buddy who worked for a compost company.
Wow.
And basically they're setting up contracts that are like kind of staged, and all they need to do is pencil whip it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of very wealthy people who are like just kind of waiting to jump it.
Once the money's behind it.
Oh, yeah.
More money.
Marlboro has farms ready to go.
Eaterettes. Like, it's going to be in a green bag.
You know what I mean?
Can you imagine a Marlboro marijuana cigarette? I'm thinking back to how this used to be. Like when I thought, you know, when I was younger, we had like, I grew up in a small town. We had like our one smoke shop. I think it was the Glass Bottom, which is like kind of a larger franchise in Arizona, I think. But it was super sketchy. That's like where like the heroin dealers hung out to smoke hookah. The guy who ran the place was super nice, but he had like really dirty fingernails for some reason.
This is gross,
and it was just like the whole place was like, these are tobacco water pipes. And they had like a $18,000 pipe up in the corner. And I'm sitting here and you'd go in there and there's some like bath salts. I was like, this whole thing is sketchy and scary. But now as years have progressed, it's like, you know, we're talking coming up on almost a decade later. It's a completely different industry. It's nuts. It's clean. It's nice. Crazy. The people are legit, and you've lost all of that scumminess. And it's just like, this isn't scary anymore because you got to be able to convince grandma who has her medical marijuana card because she's got, you know, glaucoma
or arthritis.
She doesn't want to be scared when she goes there. I want to hit the entire base.
Well, yeah, no. And it's, I mean, it's crazy, dude. Like you'll go into some of these dispensaries and most people aren't allowed obviously in them because they don't have cards. There's only 200,000 patients in Arizona only, but you know,
only.
Right.
But like even in California, like there's some of these nationwide brands. There's they're out here in Arizona, not plugging them at all because they don't even sell dab caps. They should, but they don't.
But,
get on that.
We're gonna bleep their name. Actually,
yeah.
we'll send them an email after
they
this.
Like,
that could have been you,
right? I don't know. But you know what's funny, man? Is everyone describes that store as like the Apple store of dispensaries. And and there's a lot of them actually that kind of modeled their.
I love that the industry for, you know, the products and stuff you guys sell, they love to compare things to Apple. Cause I remember I was like a freshman in college and we went to, it was the Hippie Gypsy in Tucson on 4th Ave.
I know that place. Yep. Yeah.
Just like going, oh my God, we're here. And, this guy's like trying to sell this guy. It was one of the first vaporizers.
The PAX.
Yeah, that's exactly what he's like. I'm surprised you already knew. 100%. He's like, this is the iPhone of vaporizers. And we're all saying, like, none of it. We're all pansies. We're like, oh shit, I'm not buying that. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, we can't right. do this. But we were there.
Yeah.
So we were pretty gangster. But yeah. he's describing this as the iPhone of, you know, vaporizers. Like, if I needed a vaporizer, I'm buying that one.
So do you want to know something funny?
I do.
That company, which was started by Harvard graduates, I will say, those guys actually, they crushed it. They originally started with these tobacco vaporizers. It was called the Plume. And the company itself was called Plume.
I know exactly the guys you're talking about. I saw it on, it was a documentary about the Juul.
Oh, yeah. So you know where it's going. Yeah. Okay. So they started with this tobacco vaporizer called the Plume, and it had these little pods. Right. But they weren't pods like you're thinking, like a Juul. It was like literal, like, Keurig little pods that you put in it, and it had to like loose leaf tobacco.
Wow. It was weird.
And it vaporized it.
That's pretty crazy.
And so then they, you know, that kind of worked for them, not that well. But then they launched the PAX, and that was just like this game changing device that everyone said was, you know, the iPhone of vaporizers. And it pretty much took off from there, dude. They've got PAX broke off and became its own company. Now it's called, the company's called PAX, and they have like the PAX 3 right now. But the same company that started the PAX, Plume, the one we were talking about earlier, they ultimately ended up becoming PAX Labs, which started Juul. So
it's all coming together.
Right.
Wow.
You know what I mean? And
that's pretty significant.
Obviously, there's some very mixed opinions on the Juul, but if you want to talk about some people that really killed it,
like, yeah.
Wow.
Juul took off. Yeah.
Juul took off.
Made billions.
If I was a high schooler, I know what I'd buy.
Right?
No, I mean, I talked
to you. Yeah, don't listen, high school.
I got addicted to my Juul, and then now I'm like trying to quit. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to quit dipping with my Juul. And I was like, damn it, now I'm addicted to my Juul.
Right.
We're getting close on time. What I want to ask you, though, is tell me about this expo you went to. What does that look like? How was that?
So, yeah, it was interesting.
What was the expo, first of all?
So it's called MJ BizCon. And so there's a ton of different biz. There's a ton of expos in the industry. There's a ton of expos in every industry, obviously. And MJ BizCon is,
I'm assuming that doesn't stand for Michael Jordan.
Right. No. It's one of the biggest ones in the industry. It was at the Las Vegas Convention Center. It had two floors. And if anyone's been there and is familiar with how big that place is, like, I'm talking like you can fit an entire fleet of airplanes in this building. Like,
jeez,
it is endless.
Like, is it in the convention center?
Yeah. And so it was two floors.
Right.
Like, it was huge. Wow. And so, I mean, there was everything from there, from like small smoke shops all the way to like Philips, the light company. Like, a lot of people don't realize, but there's multi-billion dollar brands deeply. Like, Microsoft had a booth there.
Wait, Microsoft?
Microsoft.
What, how does Microsoft involve in any of this? Are they selling O365?
Yeah, they actually are. It's hilarious you ask.
I actually, when I sold IT, I sold to a couple dispensaries, and I always felt really cool. I was like, I'm with the cool kids.
No, through Microsoft Dynamics, which is their CRM, which I've heard isn't the greatest, but that's a whole separate topic. But through Microsoft Dynamics, they sell a seed-to-sale software, which basically tracks
seed to sale.
It sounds like, seed to sale, all the way from like planting the seeds to like the plants to crop to production to packaging. That's amazing. To sale.
And then I'm assuming Philips is like providing lights for like grow ops.
For grow ops, yeah.
That
like
makes sense.
There are some massive.
Where's
massive
Boeing
companies
fit in there?
You want to hear something really funny about this? My roommate, he works for an investment firm, and people will call him up and say, I don't want you investing with this blank company on my account. And these are like $1 million accounts, so they get clout.
Right.
And they're like, because they think marijuana is good. I guarantee they don't know that Microsoft and Philips are involved in this to a degree. And it's just so funny because they're like, okay, I guess we won't invest in that for you. Congratulations with your morals.
Oh, yeah. No, it's hilarious. It's shocking, some of the companies that you see there. Like, I actually was like blown away. Like, some of them I took pictures of because I was like, I cannot believe that I'm sitting here. First of all, at a literal convention of this size, like, these are all companies that, like, so even as little as 10 years ago, probably wouldn't have been able to be around. You know what I mean? And it's like,
so new, so cutting edge.
And yeah. And a lot of them aren't like medicinal brands. It's not like they're actually selling, you know, the product itself. They're selling ancillary goods, you know?
Yeah.
And even then, it was kind of like, I don't really know. You know what I mean? Like, that's probably considered not okay, even as little as 10 years ago. And here we are now filling a gigantic building with all of these brands. Right. And, like, I mean, there was probably 50,000 attendees. It was insane.
That's nuts, man. It's still weird to me just thinking about the changes in it. So, how did it go? Did you get some networking done? Do you feel like you
made it productive?
It went really well. I definitely closed several deals, which is always good. Mm-hmm. It's funny how these conventions work. They all operate a little bit differently. Like there's trade shows and then there's like expos, and they're both very different. There's
You're gonna have to tell me the difference because I thought they were the same thing.
Right, I know it kind of does sound the same, right? But expos are more like, kind of the brands are out there just like flexing almost. I know it sounds ridiculous.
You said expos?
Yeah.
Sounds like French.
Like the expos.
Expo.
Yeah, they're all just kind of there. They're kind of like trying to outdo each other.
Like Bang Energy when they're out there with the chicks and the drinks.
Right. Yeah. Basically, expos are just way bigger. Okay. Trade shows are much smaller. They're more intimate, for lack of a better word.
That's but when the insider trading happens.
No, it's just where you get... Yeah, right. It's where you really, like, meet direct buyers.
Okay.
So here's the difference. I guess at a trade show, for example, Champs, which is the trade show that we never miss. There's, like, several of them. We went to three of them this year, Chicago, Denver, and Vegas. It's a great show. And at Champs, you would meet maybe a guy who owns a chain of local smoke shops in any given state. You know what I mean? He's right. Like, oh, yeah, I own 5 shops. I'm a decent buyer. You know what I mean? I'll buy several hundred units. It's what we'll do good business, right? Mm-hmm. So that's good because you can meet tons of those guys, like tons. You can operate a whole business just off that.
Right.
Expos are much different.
You meet the customers, right?
You meet the customers, but you mainly meet reps from other brands.
So it's like business networking, basically. Yeah,
you know what I mean? And for me, it's a unique opportunity because the Dab Cap, we can actually customize and print logos to the other side. So we do custom Dab Caps.
Oh, my God, we're expanding.
Yeah.
Features.
It's still mine, but it can be yours, too.
Well, ooh. That's the thing. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, we've done over 50 of them now. We screen print their logo to the opposite. So the Dab Cap logo itself is debossed into the device. Like it's part of the mold. Mm-hmm. And then we screen print their logo to the other side. So kind of like as a consumer, when you look at it, you can kind of tell like this is the brand because it's debossed, you know? And then you're like, okay, well, and they probably got customized version.
It becomes like a tchotchke, like where you have like pens, like you get a big 100%. Pen, but it's we'll say Cisco or Microsoft and you can hand those out as like a thing.
Exactly. And so, and it holds a lot more value than, you know, a pen or a lanyard, because those usually end up in the trash can.
You can actually use this.
People actually use this. Yeah. Yeah. And not only that, like when you give someone a Dab Cap, if they know what it is, they literally feel like you just gave them $11. You know what I mean? They're like, wow, that was really nice. Like when you give them a pen, they're like, okay, bro,
yeah, I got
like
I got
40 of them at home.
Actually, you know? I'll tell you right now.
Throw this in my drawer.
I've gotten some really nice pens. If you give me a shitty pen, I'm going to know you gave me a shitty pen. But if you give me a really high quality pen, like you might have earned my loyalty.
But you know what? You probably spent more on that pen than you did on the Dab Cap.
Hey, there you go.
That's true.
I think, God, I just love your product. I think it's so hilarious just because it makes so much sense. And it's at the end of the day, like, I know too many people I went to high school with. I know too many people I went to college with. And I'm just like, I know that they would buy this for whatever amount that they have to pay. And they pull it out at a party, and they'd be like, hey, look at this. Right. And everyone would be like, whoa. And they would be the popular guy at that moment. So that's why I love the product in general, just because I like funny things that are also useful. Like, if I can laugh at this and then also use it, like, congratulations, I'm in.
Right. No, I feel that. I mean, dude, it's almost like a talking piece, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Like, that's why it's, like, it's been very easy. Like, and I shouldn't say easy, but it's been easier than, like, if I would have started because of how unique it is, because there's nothing that's been like it. A lot of the owners of the shops and the managers are very open to it. They're very like, wow, that's super cool. You know, versus if I'm
not selling something they have already, it's like something new.
It's not a competitive product. It's something they already have, you know?
Right.
It's always annoying for someone to walk up to you and say like, hey, you already have this, but it's like, okay, your butt might be good, but like, man, I'd really like this to just stay the same. I don't want to talk to you. I have a guy already, but it's like, no, I'm offering something completely different. And it's just easy enough and right. the cost is just low enough to where it's like, this is something you don't even have to think about that hard.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's very low risk.
You know? So do you do any other products?
Well, we got a few other products. We got something called Spin Cap.
What's a Spin Cap?
It's for like a less of an amateur user, I guess. So like the dab cap is for people who are kind of new to the whole scene, and also anyone who kind of just feels like using it. It works for everyone, but the spin cap is more for like a connoisseur type person. It has a much different process. We won't really go into it, okay. But it's basically for like a whole different medium.
So you have like levels. You have like an entry level, and then you have like some more involved products. Right. I mean, that thing's
$45.
Okay.
The dab cap is $10.95. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so it's just
like almost like a collector's piece, almost.
All you've done is made me want to.
Or like a unique,
right?
You know, accessory. Unique yeah. accessory.
Hear that, guys? You have to go to his website to find out.
Exactly.
Ooh. I mean, well, one thing you know I've noticed is you're starting to do different types of social media products. You know, you're starting to do like instead of you know your videos with dab cap itself, now you're starting to do more like you know videos interacting with people.
Oh yeah, we've mentioned this about two times. We cannot leave without you talking about your video because. Right.
Absolutely.
You're a fucking goon.
So I've definitely trying to turn DabCap. So DabCap's got a pretty big loyal audience, and it's all like we've never bought a single follower. Like not a single follower has been purchased. So they're all real people and they all actually care about the brand in at least 1%. You know what right. I mean? And so because of that, we're trying to like direct that audience towards something else, and that happens to be YouTube in this example. And did this YouTube video. Basically, it was called Giving People Free Bong Rips. And we set up a table at ASU and on Mill Avenue. Mm-hmm. And it had a big sign, and it said free bong rips. And
the bong was obnoxiously big, guys.
Yeah. So.
I don't even want to give it away entirely. So that I want them to go check it out themselves. What would, if I want to type it into YouTube right now, what would I type in?
If you just go on YouTube and you search original dab cap, our page will be the first thing that comes up.
It is funny. I thought it was hilarious. And actually, the interaction with the police is actually, I think, shows a very positive
way. Progressive.
With all of these negative videos with the police, I thought you had a very positive experience overall.
Oh, dude, 100%. I have to give some big credit to the ASU PD and the officer that we dealt with. You know, very professional. Just the entire time, like, the guy was just so cool. It was almost like I couldn't believe it was real. I was like,
it's like you're supposed respect. To be beating
are
me right
now. Respect. You know what I mean? Are you wearing a police costume or are you a real cop?
I should be yelling about how I can't breathe right now.
Right. I mean, literally, yeah. You know, like,
I know my rights.
Tased, you know?
It's like, this is going way too smoothly.
Right, literally. Well, that was the thing is, like, obviously we were filming, so, you know, I wasn't looking for trouble by any means. Mm-hmm. But I was not opposed to like a cop being a total asshole and getting some good
drama.
See, I'm telling content. You, we could have gotten you a few more views. What you should have named the video is like, "Am I being detained?" in all caps.
You know what I mean?
And then you put like a screaming emoji on it. And there you go. Like we're
well, that was the thing, dude. It's funny as he was walking away. I was with our camera guy, and I was like, "Hey, man, like, should we go stop him and see if he'll like." Pretend to arrest me for the thumbnail, like put me in handcuffs.
You probably would
like,
have lost with that. You're an idiot.
You know what I mean? Yeah. But yeah, no, he was like, "Nah, dude." Like,
I think we
he
think
was
we
too
okay.
cool. Yeah. Like, let's not ruin this. You know?
Yeah, that's so funny.
But yeah, I mean, dude, it was. I'm not gonna ruin the video for anyone, but let's just say the first question the cop asked me, which kind of shows you how cool he was and how like not. Confrontational, I guess you'd say was he came up and he goes, "Hey, I'm officer, you know, X," introduces himself and he goes, "I just wanted to confirm, do you have a permit to be here?"
You were legit. You just want to make sure you were legit. Mm-hmm.
Dude.
He didn't even care what was in the bong.
He did not care about the 3-foot bong on the table, the big yellow sign that said free bong rips.
Just right. He had a permit.
Right.
Just wanted to know if we had a permit. And because, I mean, technically, that is probably the first question asked.
That should be the first question, really.
If you don't have a permit, you shouldn't be there.
I don't care who you are.
What you're doing.
Right.
We'll get to that later.
Right.
Do you have a permit?
Right. I mean, you could be giving out lemonade, but if you have a permit,
that's a good point.
You can't be there.
8-year-old, get out of my face. You don't got a permit. You know what I mean? Guy with bong, you have a permit?
Right.
Nope.
You're all the same.
You're out of here too.
I don't see age. I don't see gender. I don't see color. Do you have a permit?
Right.
That's a good cop right there.
Dude, it was funny, man. And obviously, like, you know, he did the police work. He made sure that everything was like kosher and, you know, not like he very discreetly made sure that, you know, no laws were being broken. But at the same time, he didn't go like just come in guns blazing, looking for a fight, you know, which I thought was really cool.
Was your camera guy like there, like this? You know, I'm holding my camera hands up to Dylan's face, so you guys
like within arm's reach, or was he like kind of some distance?
No, he was a good like 25 yards away.
Ooh,
like,
so you were by yourself. Okay, good for him.
Yeah. I'm sure the cop. Here's the thing. Like, he obviously was an idiot. He probably knew that like something funny was going on. Like, we were filming a video. Like, there's a ton of people who film YouTube pranks at ASU all the time. So it's not the first time.
Not his first rodeo.
Something weird has happened, right? You know what I mean?
So it was the original dab cap on YouTube?
Just original dab cap. Oh, no, the.
Okay, original dab cap on YouTube.
Right.
Okay, cool. Again, we're coming really close. I want to ask your opinion on one last thing.
Yeah.
We always try to end on a hot take. So CBD, we talked about it a little bit briefly before. I have a varying amount of trust towards CBD because I'm an officer in the military, and sometimes I'll hear like my junior enlisted, they're talking about like, yeah, it has no THC and it's no problem. And I always have to kind of like be the bummer. Right. Like, hey, it's not regulated, so just, you know, be careful. Like, just be trusted. So, and then we had an example of like someone, so I have like some, you know, generalized anxiety myself, and I would, you know, love to be able to do that. So like, you know, I used my girlfriend as a guinea pig, and then we drug tested her after and she failed it. So what is your opinion on CBD? She failed it from the CBD. That's what happened.
That's what she said.
Oh, that's what she said. Yeah, I feel like I haven't had any conversation.
Right.
Maybe I could have my CBD right now and she let me know.
Okay, so yeah, no, I definitely know kind of where you're going with that and what you're asking. Funny you should ask about CBD. My opinion about CBD is pretty mixed. So I believe CBD works. I've used topical CBD products that have worked really well. I've had some back pain previously, and I've used patches that definitely relieve the pain. And so, but here's the thing: it was very temporary. It would relieve the pain for, you know, the day, and then it would come back the next day. So it was like every other medication. You know what I mean? It didn't fix it, right? And so I was more concerned with fixing it rather than just, you know, remediating it temporarily. And so I think CBD works in that regard. I don't know how well it works in like a vaporizer format. I think it's much better in a topical form.
Okay.
But to answer your question about the drug test, because I know that's pretty much the hot topic on that, what I can tell you and what I can recommend is that most smoke shops are, the buying process is not intense. They go to a wholesale store and they're like, oh, that looks good, I'm going to buy that. You know what I mean? And the wholesale store, their buying process was probably pretty similar, maybe slightly more in depth than that, but not much. Like in the terms of like the wholesaler was like, okay, these CBD products look good, I could sell these. Do you have a lab test? And then the buyer or the merchant could be like, I do have a lab test. And he could show him a test, but that test could be a year and a half old.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't represent that exact sample. You know what I mean? And so from there, the wholesaler's just like, okay, cool, we'll buy it. And they start selling it, and then they don't realize what they're selling. You know, there's basically no one is doing the in-depth research they need to do on that side of the market. Well, I'm not going to say no one, because that's generalizing. Most aren't, you know? And so, however, what I would recommend to you and to anyone listening is you can actually go to state-licensed dispensaries as a non-patient and purchase pure CBD products. And And that way, you know, they are regularly lab tested products. They have to be lab tested to be sold at a dispensary. You know, they're actually being regulated. You know that what you're buying is legit. And so, and furthermore, on top of that, what you need to keep in mind to give yourself almost some peace of mind is that these dispensaries, if it turns out that they accidentally sell you THC, they lose their license. That's so like they are.
Ooh. Yeah. I love when people have some skin in the game. Yeah. That's what I like.
That's a $5 to $10 million loss, depending on the location. And that's pretty serious. No one is willing to take that kind of L just to make sure that you got some CBD and you can sleep right. You know what I mean?
You gave me the answer I was exactly hoping for. I was like, I wanted him to like have a positive answer for people to, because there's a lot of people that have federal jobs. And, you know, are they skirting things? Are they being a little bit, you know, should they be doing that? Should they not? But if they're going to take a risk, I want them to take an informed risk that gives them an opportunity to not screw themselves.
No, absolutely. And that is my best advice, is just go to the dispensary, you know what I mean? And
so the one at Circle K is worse, is what you're saying.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it's just, I mean, I just exactly, you confirmed everything I thought. I was just like, I'm sure that they give it a look over. I'm sure they look to make sure that it has been tested at least once.
Right.
But don't bet your job on it.
No.
Don't bet your job on it.
Right.
No, not... Absolutely not. You know what I mean? Because they don't care at the end of the day. Like, if they get caught doing some dumb things like that, they just get a slap on the wrist, a big fine, and move on. The dispensary loses their license.
Right. That's like, huge.
It's a good point.
You know,
that's their life and death, you know, livelihood right there.
So, I mean, every single product they sell, like, you know what I mean? Like, they're not taking that risk.
Well, we're coming to time when you said you needed to cut it off. Do you want to kind of wrap up with what your current projects are, what's coming up in the future, and then we'll just do some final social media plugs?
Yeah, you know, right now I'm really focusing on like improving the overall customer experience and the kind of like the customer journey is what we call it. So it's more of like a back end terminology, but just making it a much more streamlined purchase or process, being a DabCap customer and staying involved with DabCap and kind of, you know, remaining in our network. Like right now we're kind of going from 1.0 to 2.0. So that's kind of the big project we're working on the back end. And on the front end, we are releasing a lot of new products. We've got new dab mats coming out, which is kind of like the, if you, anyone's listening, they're not familiar, but it's basically a nice little mat that you can kind of store all your things on, has storage containers, yada, yada, yada.
That's pretty cool.
We're coming out with just like a whole bunch of new tools and swag items and, you know, just consistently expanding the brand horizontally, I guess you would say. Like, you know, DabCap itself is
going 3D.
It's pretty tall. You know, that vertical is good, but now we're trying to go more horizontal.
Totally feel like that.
And where can they find you at?
Yeah, Original DabCap, pretty much on everything. OriginalDabCap.com and, you know, like I said, every other platform, just Original DabCap.
Do you want to plug yourself personally?
Yeah, if you want to check me out, I'm Dylan Osborne, DillonOsborn. And you can find me on Instagram.
Yeah, we appreciate having you, man. And just a reminder, you are listening to Back in Session. And Wes?
Yeah, so you can also find us on Instagram at WKendallMFT. And you can also find us on our podcast Instagram, which is BNS_radio. Make sure that you check us out. Leave us a comment, review, and also tell us what you want to hear more on. If you like this interview, what kind of questions we can ask in the future. We definitely want to bring Dylan on again. We didn't get all the questions that we want asked by you. And, you know, we would love to hear you again in the future. So, thanks for joining us, bro.
I'd love to be back.
Appreciate it, man. Definitely going to be taking some of your social media advice into account when I start trying to actually post, because Wes is getting mad at me. All right, guys. Thank you for coming in. We're going to have to see you next week.